All right, guys, welcome back to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Thursday, December 9th, 2021. Of course, my website is therealistreport.com, where you will find an archive of these podcasts. You will also find all of my blog posts and articles, a contact page, my Twitter feed, which is embedded in the right-hand sidebar of the website, and many other useful and important links. I am also on Telegram, so be sure to follow my channel there. You will find me at t.me/TheRealistReport. I am also a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, and I also contribute to the Barnes Review, the bi-monthly revisionist history magazine. Please do subscribe to these fine print publications if you do not already. Check out AmericanFreePress.net. and barnesreview.org for all the details. All right, today I've got a special guest, a returning guest. Monica Schaefer is joining us once again. Monica is one of the most fearless truth tellers I've ever encountered. Please check out her website at freespeechmonica.com. You will find information about her incarcerated brother, Alfred Schaefer, and ways to write to him directly in Germany, where he is still outrageously imprisoned. Monica and I discuss a variety of topics in this podcast, including the global tyranny unfolding as a result of the COVID pandemic, vaccines and natural health, the fake Holocaust narrative and Jewish victimhood, and much more. Hope you guys enjoy. Okay, Monica Schaefer, welcome back to The Realist Report. I think this is going to be your seventh appearance on the program.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
we've
done a number of programs. In fact, we did two programs. The second program we did was in December of 2017, and then the very next month was the whole situation when you were in Germany and ended up getting arrested, correct?
Oh, yeah. Actually, we talked just before I left for Germany.
It was like just a couple weeks before you went over there and ended up, you know, with all these legal problems. And of course, we've discussed your brother's situation. So, and it's been over a year since you've been on the program. So just to get started, why don't we kind of catch up and let us know how you've been, what you've been up to, what topics you've been following?
Well, I think the big one is bigger than anything we've seen before or talked about before. And that's the current attempt to genocide, you know, many, many people off the face of this earth with this COVID hoax. And that's, it overwhelms everything else, doesn't it, John? I mean, I think that you've talked with many people and guests about this. And so I don't really need to go into any great detail about it other than to say that in Canada, things are moving along tickety-boo really, really hard and fast. And it is, I mean, it's looking pretty bad. But, you know, this is the boot across the neck that Yuri Betsmanov talks about in his interviews of in the early 80s, that you can lead the people by the hand, show them the facts, you can shower them with facts. And if, you know, when they've been demoralized and degenerated, such as we have been, and I mean, he was talking in the 80s, imagine how much more so it has become since then in terms of our demoralization and the deceptions, just, you know, really bringing us down to our knees. That you can shower the people with facts and they will not see until the boot is across the neck. And I would say that this COVID thing is the boot across the neck or on the face. And that is actually serving to wake people up, jolt people awake. And I think that that is happening at a stunning rate, actually. That, I mean, I hope it's fast enough. And, you know, they are going all out with their trying to inject everybody and coercing. It's almost like you could say it's forced. It's not quite forced yet, although in some situations it is, I think, with elderly people and that kind of thing. Also with children, you know, I've heard that they've been taking busloads of kids out of schools in some locations. I'm not sure now, so I don't want to talk too much about that, but that's the kind of situation that's coming. I mean, when they start telling children they can get the shot without their parents' approval, and then if they provide it, you know, conveniently with, you know, taking them in a bus to a clinic or providing them with little goodies like ice cream cones and whatnot, if you just get this shot and it's good for you.
Yeah. You know, I just saw a news story in Los Angeles the other day where I think it was like a 13, 14-year-old kid. He was told that he'd get a free piece of pizza if he got a vaccine. And apparently the nurse or whoever was, you know, encouraging him to get vaccinated told him not to tell his parents. And his mother found out and was interviewed by the news. And there's examples like this across the country. You know, we saw stories of children being enticed and encouraged to take the vaccine, and they'd be rewarded with ice cream and pizza and other treats. I mean, it's just so evil what they're doing. And I think more than anything, it's a they're trying to bully everybody into willingly taking the vaccine. I mean, these mandates and these requirements, just say no, just do not comply.
And when they say you can't get a job or you can't go out and go into any places, and in some places in New Brunswick, for example, in the Maritime Provinces, that's one of the easternmost provinces here in Canada, New Brunswick, they've already set it up that the grocery stores can refuse entry to somebody without the vax passport or whatever they're calling it now. And so what they're doing is they're putting this into the hands of the people to police each other. But you know what I would say to all these business owners, hey, you're not the law enforcement officers. You don't have to enforce any of these mandates. For one thing, they're not laws, they're mandates, but they are they're scaring them. They're frightening them into having to enforce on to each other. So this is very communist. And what you said about the children, even more dire or more even worse than this bribery with ice cream cones and pizza slices, is the fact that they will tell the children, don't tell your parents. And they've been setting the children up for that kind of division for a long time now. For example, with the Gay Straight Alliance clubs that they formed in the schools, when the children might want to talk about these issues, like maybe they don't feel like they're in the right body and this and that. And they set up these clubs, or they called them Gay Straight Alliance, GSAs, I think that's what they were called, in the schools. And their participation in these clubs was kept confidential. So in other words, the message to the children is that your parents are actually your enemy. This is so communist, John. And so in that regard, they've been setting the stage for this for quite some time with other issues. And they would, you know, they start with more subtle things, but then it gets to this point that they inject a poison shot into the child, and quite possibly a sterilizing shot into the children, and don't tell your parents, or you don't have to tell your parents. And now it's don't tell your parents, not even you don't have to tell them. Now it's telling them not to tell your parents. So
yes, it's an incredibly evil and transparently so. This is a very evil and obviously evil agenda. All you hear about is vaccines. There's no discussion about what actually, you know, steps that you can take to naturally protect your body, to naturally maintain your health, like exercising, like eating good food, like drinking water, like getting good rest, like getting out in the sunshine, living a happy, healthy, active life. None of that is even discussed, and it hasn't been from the very beginning. It's all been about a vaccine for an alleged virus that is nothing more than a flu. I mean, that's basically what it is. And if you go off their own statistics, 99.99% of people naturally recover from this alleged coronavirus. Now, I don't buy into any of it. There's almost no aspect of this alleged pandemic that I buy into. But even if you go off of what they say themselves, you have to wonder, why are they pushing this vaccine everywhere you look?
Absolutely. That's the question right there. And I don't buy any of it either, John. You know, right now with all these so-called variants, what is happening is they're relabeling the side effects from the shots, from these, I don't even want to call them vaccines, these injections, the clot shot.
Well, they're gene therapies. They literally manipulate your genes. The one of the developers, an Israeli guy, I think he works for Moderna. You can find it. You know, he did like a TED talk where he describes these mRNA vaccines as an operating system.
Yes.
That is, you know, put into your body that basically takes over your natural DNA. So I mean, think about it. This is like transhumanism coming to fruition right before our eyes, and these people are openly celebrating it. And again, you just see this nonstop PSYOP. Everywhere you look, it's vaccines. You see, at least here in the United States, I mean, I've traveled quite a bit over the course of the past year. Well, really, since this pandemic is, quote unquote, pandemic has been going on. And you see billboards encouraging you to get a vaccine. Every single political leader, from your city councilor all the way up to the president of the United States, is demanding you get a vaccine and demanding you get a booster now and demanding your children get a vaccine. I just saw this incredibly disturbing video of Canadian President Trudeau, like, giggling and cackling and laughing about how children are now going to be injected with this gene therapy.
Oh, yeah. Well, and he's evil. The Prime Minister of Canada, he's downright evil. And I think he was groomed for this job since the day he was born.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's, in addition to the gene therapy, you may have seen this story about the German doctor Andreas Nowak, and he was murdered after he put this video out about the graphene hydroxide in the injections, which in effect they are like miniature little razor blades that are being injected into you. So that would explain all the heart problems and why so many athletes are dropping dead just when they're in the height of their game, is because their blood is flowing faster. And so these little razor blades are basically cutting them from the inside. Like, and when some people die right away from the vaccine or the shot, and in that case, probably the shot went right into the bloodstream. Whereas those that, where it goes into muscle, it'll take longer to get into the bloodstream to be cutting up the veins and arteries from inside. Have you seen that?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I am familiar with what you're talking about. Yeah. I saw it all over Telegram the other day. You could see videos of him giving presentations and kind of explaining all this. Yeah. No, I think that there seems to be something to this, you know, this whole idea of what is it? Graphene oxide, I think is the chemical or the compound or whatever it is that's in the vaccine. And see, the thing is who even knows? We can't trust anything that these people are saying. Who knows what the hell is in any of these vaccines? One thing I've been doing is looking at the history of vaccination. There's actually a book I'm just about done reading. It's called Dissolving Illusions. It's really interesting. I interviewed Dr. Lorraine Day shortly after this whole fake pandemic was sort of rolled out, and she mentioned this book, and I purchased a copy of it, and just about done reading it, and it's really interesting. It basically shows you that the whole entire history of vaccines are extremely sketchy and dangerous. And really, like, anybody who's seriously and objectively investigated the history of vaccines, you have to understand that all of them, and I mean every single last one, all of them are dangerous, poisonous, toxic, and offer far more risks and dangers than any potential benefits. I don't even think there, frankly, are any benefits from any vaccine.
No, I'm, you know, I used to think, oh, well, maybe they started out good and then they got hijacked and turned into something bad by the usual suspects. But no, I've also been researching this. I'm reading a book right now by Eustace Mullins called Murder by Injection. So along the same lines, yep. Goes into a lot of history about the whole medical establishment and how really, I mean, you read this book, you don't really want to go to a doctor for anything anymore. except maybe traumatic injury, you know, that kind of thing. But as far as like the medical establishment was basically turned from something that should be about health into an industry for pharma.
Yes. And it's designed to keep you sick. It's not designed to actually heal you. In fact, all of the real remedies for curing disease and illness and maintaining good health, you know, some of the things I mentioned, like, you know, your nutrition, getting exercise and getting good sunshine, all of these things have been thrown out the window. And your doctor won't even discuss these things with you, you know, if you go to the doctor. It's all about prescribing some sort of poison a toxic medication or toxic pill that perpetuates your disease, perpetuates your illness, while basically robbing you in the process and you know, taking all your money. So it's designed to enslave you and to keep you sick and unhealthy and to take all your money, you know, where you're spending all your money on these pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, in
it's
fact,
it's incredible. It, yeah, I want fact, nothing to do with the doctor ever again. I mean, I'm not getting health insurance. I'm not going to a doctor. I'm good. I think I can maintain my own health. I mean, as you know, unless there was like a traumatic bone break or something like that, you know, knock on wood, nothing like that ever happens. But
yeah,
I don't trust any of these people. I don't trust the medical establishment. I certainly don't trust any of these pharmaceutical companies. And you see now how openly and blatantly the propaganda is. I mean, I just watched a clip the other day of it was a series of like newscasts, you know, mainstream news programs on basically every channel, CNN, Fox News, ABC News, NBC News, and all of them are sponsored by Pfizer.
Yeah.
So it's these people are being paid to promote this propaganda, and we see how all the politicians are totally on board. And they all have the same talking points, and they're all saying the same things, and they're all basically engaged in this. Frankly, I mean, what it is, it's a psyop.
That's right. It is. It really is. And we grew up always revering doctors, almost like they're godlike creatures. That's, I don't know how that happened, but that's the sense that you got, was that doctors were revered. And then any doctor that does actually speak out and promote other, you know, maybe holistic. I mean, a lot of doctors have disappeared and been murdered over the years, haven't they? I mean, they just, or they get booted out, or they get sidelined, or they get scandalized, whatever. Like, they make sure that the messages that come out from people who are actually promoting health, that they get suppressed in whatever means possible, you know, those people get suppressed. So yeah, we know that, you know, once you look into it, oh my goodness, it just shows you that this has been not about health, but the opposite. I mean, just like everything in our world is upside down these days, and I think any topic that we discuss now, we can understand that the mainstream version is inverted and upside down from what is real. You know, for instance, just talk about hate. And they accuse people of hate, but that is always when they do not like the message. So they shoot the messenger with calling them the hater, when those who are doing that to us, they are the real haters.
Yeah, you know? Everything is so inverted.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could see it everywhere now, especially. But, I mean, you know, we've talked about World War II, the official narrative of World War II and the alleged Jewish Holocaust. I mean, literally a total inversion of reality. The mainstream story is almost the exact opposite of the way it should accurately be presented, you know, to us, you know, in school or you know, in university. Same thing with 9/11. Same thing with virtually every major event, I think you could say.
And you see it now
with you know, the medical system and you know, the pharmaceutical industry, how everything is the exact opposite. And it's interesting, too, because you even see people, and we were talking about this before we started the podcast, you can go on Telegram and other social media platforms and see all of these people who are having these very negative side effects, or they're being outright injured or like, you know, have devastating injuries from taking the vaccine, where they're bedridden, they're in the hospital, they're having blood clots, they're having heart problems. I've even seen stories of people having to have legs and arms amputated. I mean, it's crazy some of the negative reactions people are having from the vaccine. And you hear people like get on social media, get on TikTok or Instagram or whatever, and they'll start talking about their vaccine injury. And what's the first thing they say? Oh, well, I don't want to come across as an anti-vaxxer, but I have to tell you that I was injured by this vaccine. And it's like, it just shows you the power of the propaganda. Where,
it is incredible.
I mean, we should be proud anti-vaxxers.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you know the history of vaccines, like we've, you know, we previously discussed.
That's how indoctrinated people have become. You know what that reminds me of, like, your story? It reminds me of when, I think it was the daughter of some, you know, high up UN official in Europe, that she was brutally raped and murdered by some of these new Europeans, these migrants from Africa. And it was a really bad case. I mean, and there's lots of these cases, but this one was a particularly bad case, gang raped and thrown in the nearby creek or something. And the father was working as a, you know, United Nations official who was actually, you know, facilitating all these migrants coming to Europe. And he was so indoctrinated that he actually said he somehow made excuses for this, that really, it's because of they've been so oppressed and they've been so, you know, again, the fault.
It's like Stockholm syndrome. Yeah, it's like we've been so psychologically abused and manipulated and degraded.
Yeah. So again, it's Whitey's fault. So even when those people misbehave, you know, the blacks who come in, they're brought in by the masses. And when they are misbehaving and it's just so blatant, it's still our fault somehow, because we've been oppressing them, and we've been keeping them down. We've exploited them. We've exploited their countries and we've oppressed them. So it's our fault. I mean, it gets so ridiculous that it takes my speech away. Actually, I don't even know what to say about it, but that's like this person who was just vaccine injured saying, well, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I don't want to come across as an anti-vaxxer. Hello.
Yeah, I know. It's so sad. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, I did have sort of a number of things that I wanted to talk about, and some of it, well, it all relates to the war that's going on. And I guess that's the starting point, is that people need to understand and realize that we are in a war. You can call it World War III, or you could just call it war. It's just not a conventional war where people think of, you know, bombs and guns and whatnot. And it's a war on us that has been conducted through deception, but of course with very real things going on against us. And we've just talked about the big one right now, is get everybody injected with this poison shot. But there's also a weather warfare going on. And I mean, they've talked about weather warfare since decades, so it's not new, but they are really intensifying this now. And as it starts to become a little bit more obvious that they are spraying us, then when they get exposed with this, you know, then they say, well, we have to, you know, save the planet because of this other hoax, this global warming hoax, this climate change and all that whole narrative. But here in British Columbia, they've really done a number with their weather warfare. Last summer, it was the heat dome. And then in September, there was this, I don't know what they called it, a cyclone bomb or something. And then now in November, well, now December, they did these atmospheric rivers. And each time when they announced these weather, you know, the weather events coming with those new names, and I hadn't heard those names before, all my red flags went up, and I thought, oh, this is something they're manufacturing. They're bringing this to us. And sure enough, that is what they're doing. And the latest with these atmospheric rivers caused incredible flooding, such that highways were shut down. Some of them are reopened. Some of them are going to stay closed for a long time. Railways shut down, the port of Vancouver closed it down. I don't actually know if it's reopened yet or not, but it did close down completely. That's Canada's largest port that brings in imports and exports the largest variety and volume of stuff. And a gas pipeline was closed. It wasn't broken, but they closed because parts of it were exposed. So these floods were devastating. And I know that they did this with their manipulation, with their spraying and their HAARP energy weapons. So that this is weather warfare. I mean, they're going at us from all angles. There's the, you know, the everybody's supposed to get this injection in their arm. They're trying to, you know, disrupt transportation services and with the weather events and, you know, destroy food growing operations. And of course, they've been shutting down small businesses for a couple of years now with the lockdowns. They want to really basically break down society, and you know, they're very well could be empty food shelves. I mean, it's been done before, you know. Think of the Holodomor, which not too many people learn about. Everybody learns about the Holocaust, so-called Holocaust, but nobody learns about the Holodomor, what happened in the Ukraine in the 1930s, I believe it was. They starved millions of people by taking away their food and taking away their seeds even and their farm implements and starving the people. So this is an all fronts.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And the whole idea of like weather warfare is a topic that is very interesting. It's honestly not one that I've really done a whole lot of research into. I mean, I'm familiar with the concept and I've heard, like, you know, I've seen like videos about it, you know, articles about it. Like, I remember like when I first started listening to like Alex Jones years ago, when I was kind of waking up to 9/11, you know, he would sort of talk about it. And I think that there is a lot of legitimate information that points to there being, you know, weather weapons, and certainly the military's like researched, you know, how to manipulate the weather and stuff like that. So I wouldn't be surprised if that sort of thing is going on. But one thing you're making me think of is at the very beginning of this alleged pandemic, I remember reading an article and listening to a podcast with a guy named Tom Woods, who does Technocracy News. Are you familiar with that website?
No, I'm not.
He wrote this article basically saying that this whole pandemic is basically the people behind, you know, promoting this idea of a COVID-19 pandemic are the same people that were behind this whole idea of global warming. And it's like the same forces working together to implement this like globalist system. And I think that is absolutely spot on. You see the same organizations, the same groups, the same people that are both tied into both of these hoaxes. And they're absolutely designed to install this globalist system.
Might you be talking about the Jews?
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, of course. I mean, that's yeah, they're very much involved in this, as they are with everything, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it is interesting though, and I think that there is a lot to it for sure.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that's been going on here. Another thing that I wanted to tell you about, and it's you know, what's going on for Canada, is these new rules for so-called immigration and the new parameters for the officers, the officers who screen the immigrants and refugee, you know, screening the claims and whatnot. And basically it comes down to, you believe anything that the refugee is telling you. You shouldn't disbelieve them. You have to trust that what they're telling you, because, well, they give all these weird excuses, and they're talking about intersectionality as defined as two or more of race, religion, indigeneity, political beliefs, socioeconomic status, age, sexual orientation, culture, disability, or immigration status that impact an individual's lived experience of discrimination, marginalization, or oppression. So if your prospective refugee claims to have been, you know, discriminated against because of their sexual orientation or because of whatever else, their political beliefs or their socioeconomic status, even whatever, the officer is just supposed to take them at their word. They're not even supposed to have try to prove any of this, because that could further marginalize these claimants and whatnot. I mean, It is basically telling them to just let everybody in. Here, let me just read this one part here. Okay, so this chairperson instructs his staff and judges to remember that trauma, whether physical or emotional, can cause people to recollect information or incidents incorrectly. So this trauma basically can cause people to lie, but they're saying, well, that was the trauma that did that. So it's basically
So it's like not their fault and we have to just accept them.
Yeah.
No, yeah, you see the same thing here as well. Yeah.
Don't exclude them. It says, do not exclude them. They might be just misremembering due to the lingering stress caused by a trauma. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's such double speak. It's convoluted. You don't even really understand what they're saying, but ultimately the message is, let everybody in. Let me just read a little bit more here out of this newsletter from Paul Frum's organization. That's the immigration hotline, and he has the Canadian Association for Free Expression. So adjudicators essentially must now say yes to everyone who makes it to Canadian soil and claims, not proves, just merely claims that they are a victim of two or more of a broad range of abuses, some invisible and mild. And it goes on to say that already 22 of just over 300 adjudicators already admit 100% of the claimants appearing before them. Most of those 22 are Liberal appointees. And the average acceptance rate across the country is about 70%. Now, with these new instructions, that rate is going to go way up in terms of who admits 100% of the claimants. And, you know, word gets around quickly in these other countries that, hey, Canada is basically open borders now. Let's all go there. Yeah, right. So that's another assault.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, and this is one that's been going on for a very long time. And it's every single Western, formerly white country.
That's right.
In Europe, in Australia, in the United States, in Canada, certainly. I mean, everywhere. It's like this whole idea of white genocide is very real and very easy to demonstrate if you just open your eyes and look at our immigration policy.
That's right.
And when I say our immigration policy, I mean basically any Western country. It's all It's all basically open borders. And this idea of like civic nationalism is promoted where anybody can come and be an American or be a Canadian. There's no, ethnic ties or anything like that. And yet this idea is totally discarded when it's applied to non-white countries.
That's right. And, you know, John, this will bring us right around to the topic that we also wanted to talk about. But if anybody opposes this or anybody speaks out even mildly and timidly, you know, they start to think, gee, there's something wrong with this. Even if they're not red-pilled people, they're normies, but they start to feel very uncomfortable with this and they start to question it. Well, they are immediately branded as racists. And this is one of the most weaponized words we have against us, the white people. And then the next step from being branded a racist is that this will lead to the next Holocaust. You see, that's the narrative. And that's where the Holocaust narrative is still so incredibly relevant. You know, people try to sometimes say, well, why do you bother with something that happened so long ago? Like this is ancient news and let it go already. We've got other problems. But, well, two things I would say to that. One is that if it was irrelevant, they would not continue to persecute and jail people for questioning the official Orthodox Holocaust narrative. So obviously it is very relevant to our current times, or they wouldn't care what any of us say about it. And in the other way it is extremely relevant is they can keep their agenda going in terms of opening all the borders, and that none of us are allowed to even whisper opposition to letting anybody and everybody into our white privileged countries. Oh, we've just, you know, had nothing but white privilege and we're so entitled and we need to share with the world and let everybody in. And so it comes back to the Holocaust narrative. Again, you know, if you whisper an opposition to this, you are a racist. And if you're a racist, this is going to lead to a Holocaust. What do you think about that, John?
Oh, no, yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the whole entire New World Order system is fundamentally based on the official World War II narrative, and especially the fake Holocaust story.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's fundamentally tied into it, and it's like the backbone. It's like the linchpin of this entire system, this entire New World Order system. So, yeah, I mean, yeah. I completely agree, and that's something that, you know, we've been talking about since the first time we ever did a podcast, something that I've been writing about and talking about in other podcasts since I started the website, so.
Yeah, and it really is a linchpin.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
linchpin in that also, if people, once the Holocaust narrative falls, and it is falling, like lots of people understand and know that it's a false narrative. When that falls, their whole house of cards comes tumbling down, because that really is the Jewish identity of, you know, they are forever the persecuted people, but while they are actually doing the persecuting, you know, they stab you in the back while they cry, ouch, right? That's the fundamental narrative of the Jewish story.
Yes.
And that's where they get their power from, really, you know, do anything. And you can't criticize them. You can't look at anything they do with a critical eye, because they are forever persecuted. They're the victim.
Yes. So, yes. Yeah. This idea of victimhood is very much tied into Jewish identity. And, you know, and I've mentioned this in numerous podcasts and written about it, but you can even look at like public opinion surveys of Jews. And the fake Holocaust is the most important aspect of most modern Jews' identity, no matter where they're at. If they're in America, if they're in Israel, if they're in Europe, I mean, the fake Holocaust story is like what defines them as a Jew.
Absolutely.
So,
right.
So it's this like totally weaponized fake historical narrative is a you know, a unifying factor for Jews. It brings them a sense of purpose and mission. And, you know, they have this mantra, never again, we'll never, you know, never let the Holocaust happen again. So it's like a way to strengthen Jewish identity and bring Jews together for a common purpose. And yet it's used to systematically undermine any form of white identity. I mean, if you say you're like a proud white person, you're immediately associated with Hitler and the Nazis and the Holocaust. To a point where now, I mean, and again, you can see this in public opinion surveys, you know, whites are right, you know, when whites are asked about what, you know, their identity and they're asked if their race or ethnicity is important or central to their identity, the vast majority of them say no. The vast majority of them are, in fact, ashamed of their racial or ethnic background.
That is the saddest thing ever, and that is something we have to work hard to reverse, this self-hatred, you know, that whites are guilty of everything. And so many people have absorbed that message. So they think, well, it's okay if we disappear because we've done everything bad anyway. And so maybe our time is up and maybe we deserve that kind of thing. That is really one of the most fundamental things that we have to reverse with, you know, first of all, getting people to, appreciate their ancestors, appreciate their culture, to know about it, to love their music, their traditions, their everything about it, you know, and also to be proud of our accomplishments and our ancestors' accomplishments, instead of thinking that we were guilty of everything that ever went wrong on the face of this earth.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I've long argued that in order to do that, you have to confront this fake historical narrative.
That's right.
I mean, you know, it's central. It's like, you know, the only way to overcome it is by confronting this head on and recognizing the truth of World War II and National Socialism. Yeah.
That's right. This might be a good time to you had that video, and maybe tell that story about the former student of that school where the teacher said that they should show both sides or teach both sides of the Holocaust, or, you know, more than one side. There's more than one side to this, any story, really.
But, right.
And do you want to do that? And
we can jump into that. There were a couple, you know, recent news items relating to the Holocaust that I wanted to kind of discuss here. And yeah, this one, it was a school district in Texas. One of the administrators, and I'm sure most people listening are familiar with this. This happened a few months ago. I think it was back in October. And she was recorded saying, we have to present both sides of the Holocaust. And it created this huge controversy. And Jews were coming out of the woodwork, and not only Jews, but other people as well, saying, oh, there's no two sides to the Holocaust. There's only one side. There's only one narrative, the official Jewish narrative. And there's a video that is really, really revealing. I'm going to go ahead and play it. I know you did get a chance to listen to it, correct?
Yes, I did.
Okay, let me see if this will play. I'm gonna. It's you're not gonna be able to hear it, but it will be recorded. So
my name is Jake Bird. Yeah.
Let me. Oh, sorry. I think it's already going. Okay, so 1 second. This is about 2 minutes, and then we'll come back and comment on it. So this is this is a student at this. He's a former student at this high school in South Lake, Texas, and he's giving testimony at a public meeting following this controversy. So let's go ahead and listen to this real quick.
And Southlake has been a part of my life since my parents moved here before I started kindergarten in 1994. My parents moved my brother and I here for this very school district, at the time a 3A district that claimed to offer one of the best public secondary educations in the state. This was consistent with my experience for a time, as I was able to learn from excellent teachers and administrators alike. It was one of those administrators, then the Dawson principal, that strongly urged my parents to pull me out of the district in eighth grade. I was subject to a rash of bullying, almost all of which was anti-Semitic in nature. I received everything from jokes about my nose to gas chambers, all while studying for my bar mitzvah from a Holocaust survivor as my primary tutor. Last week's occurrence was assuredly a misstep and a mistake, not due to her any internal feeling from her. And Dr. Ledbetter's statement correctly stated that there are not two sides to the Holocaust. And I'm very thankful for Dr. Ledbetter using such clear language, as this elucidates the reality of the ridiculous and stupid law here in the state of Texas. Here are the facts, many of which in this country want to either whitewash or ignore. The facts are that there are not two sides to the Holocaust. The Nazis systematically killed millions of people. There are not two sides to slavery. White Europeans enslaved black Africans in this country until June 19, 1865, a moment we're barely 150 years removed from. There are not two sides to Jim Crow. There are not two sides to racism, and that same oppression continues today. These are facts. The other facts are that I, a Jewish kid born in Dallas, was bullied on a daily basis for my religion for almost 2 years in this very district, nearly driving me to suicide before thankfully being removed from the environment thanks to an administrator. I still struggle with the depression that started at Dawson Middle School in 2003 to this very day. The message you and the state are sending to your teachers opens the door for more of this type of behavior in your students. If you don't think that these same attacks are happening in your schools today with regard to someone's skin color, gender, or religion, you're sorely mistaken. You have the opportunity as a district to lead the state that's sorely need of leadership in its education department, as shown by its 38th ranking nationally. There are 8,400 students in the district whose minds need to be cultivated and developed, and hundreds of extremely capable teachers and administrators who desperately need to be supported. This is a crossroads for the state and for this district. One path is an opportunity to lead and be on the right side of history. The other will cost you and your children a quality education.
Thank you.
Oy vey, Monica, this poor Jewish kid getting bullied because of his nose and because of his religion. And
that's what I was saying the whole time I listened to it.
It's so pathetic. I mean, you see how this victim mentality is so ingrained in these people.
Yes, it is.
And
yes,
you know, according to this kid, and you know, this is his opinion is very mainstream in the organized Jewish community, certainly, and probably even mainstream among most people. You know, most people would probably agree with a lot of the things that he was saying, because they have been so brainwashed by Jewish propaganda. He says there's no two sides to the quote-unquote Holocaust. There's no two sides to any of these weaponized Jewish narratives of history, whether it's relating to slavery or Jim Crow or racism. I mean, these Jews, they literally, they think they can just tell us what to think about everything, especially these very emotionally charged, totally weaponized anti-white narratives that they've concocted and perpetuated, in the media, in the educational system, in Hollywood films. I mean, this is a big psyop against white people, and they want to just sit here and say, we can't even question them.
Deborah Lipstadt, a Jewish Holocaust professor, outright says, never debate a Holocaust denier. Never debate, never discuss it. And, you know, that in and of itself tells you something, right? I mean, it just, they can't debate it because the evidence is not on their side, right? They don't have any evidence, but they don't couch it in those terms. They just say, oh, she'll say something about, oh, don't lower yourself to that level. Well, hang on a second. You know, truth does not fear investigation. If they had all this evidence they keep telling us that they have to support it, well, then they shouldn't be so afraid of it that they make it illegal to present evidence in the court of law. I want to read this declaration that was published in Le Monde, which is the French newspaper of record, kind of like in the States, you know, New York Times, that caliber of newspaper, in 1979, February 21st. 34 signatories of French historians and professors. This is what they said. Quote, one must not ask oneself how technically such a mass murderer was possible. It was technically possible since it happened. That is the requisite starting point of any historical inquiry into the subject. It is incumbent upon us to state this truth simply. There is not, there cannot be any debate on the existence of the gas chambers. End of quote. Imagine that. That's these professors, history professors, and they had that printed in the major newspaper in France. Now, to me, John, that is good for us. That they did us a favor, because really any thinking person that looks at that with a critical eye and not just from a zombified, you know, completely programmed mind, but actually lets a little bit of a crack of, like, just open the window a little bit, let the light come through, you can say, wow, that doesn't make sense, it's not logical. They just say, well, don't ask how it happened or how it was possible. It's technically possible because it happened.
Right. Think about, I mean, it's like so anti-intellectual, so anti, like, scientific. You know, it's just blind belief. I mean, it really is. That's essentially what they're telling you to do. Just blindly accept what all these deceitful, lying Jews have been telling you about the fake Holocaust.
Yeah, so that's what this student really was saying. You know, there's no two sides of anything in terms of the Holocaust. This is how it is. There's no debate. That's their way.
They have a lot of nerve. It's really infuriating seeing a guy like this get up there and express himself this way. With like, it's just, it's so foreign to me. Like, it is such a foreign thing to, like, imagine me getting up and telling a group of people, look, it's unacceptable for you to question anything I'm saying. I mean, it's like, basically that's their mindset, is like, you can't question what we Jews say.
And they are the ultimate supremacists. They do believe that they are superior. And in fact, they don't even think of us as humans. I mean, they say that themselves, that we are in human bodies so that they can be served by, so they don't have to be served by something that looks like an animal, but we are actually animals, like we're cattle at best, and in their minds, right? And so they are the ultimate supremacists. So when they use this slur against us, white supremacists, and they'll use that slur against us, and it's a very weaponized word. Even at the slightest mention of anything that has to do with just wanting to survive, let alone, you know, thrive, they criminalize you if you say it's okay to be white. That is, I'm not kidding you, they criminalized that, because there were some posters that went up in, I think it was in Winnipeg, Manitoba, just some posters were put up, it's okay to be white, and a criminal investigation was launched. Actually, maybe in London, Ontario. It happened in many places in Canada.
It happened here.
Criminal investigation. Yeah.
It happened here. I mean, it's okay to be white sign gets posted on like a college campus. Next thing you know, you got the FBI investigating. I mean, it's like for a simple sign.
Just to say it's okay to be white. Not even to say, you know, whites should be given more opportunities here. You know, not even anything like that. It's just to be okay to be white. Like, obviously, our existence is now the problem. And, well, that is what it comes down to, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and now all you hear from, like, the Biden administration, if they're not promoting vaccines, they're talking about how dangerous white supremacists are and how white supremacists are the greatest threat facing the country. Meanwhile, over the course of the past 2 years, organized Antifa and BLM terrorists have literally destroyed entire cities. And they're not investigated.
I'd love to address that, because this looting that's being allowed unimpeded, yeah, you're right. That's being done by predominantly the black people.
By black criminals. I mean, you look at the videos of it, and it's all these black guys doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then who comes in and who volunteers to clean up? It's the white people. It's always the white people who comes in and cleans up the mess afterwards. I mean, that's what's going on. And, you know, I think one of the reasons that they're another offshoot, I would say, or another side effect of this looting being just allowed to go rampant without any enforcement trying to protect small shops and businesses and just let their shelves be emptied by the looters. I think that also plays into this agenda piece that everybody is going to be chipped, or, you know, you'll have your code, your QR code or whatever they call it, so that what the shopkeepers are going to be forced to do is install heavy doors in front of all the shelves, and maybe there'll be a picture on the outside what's inside, and you can't open these doors to access the item unless you scan your code in front of it, so that in effect cuts you off, if you don't have one of these codes, from being able to access goods
right,
in the shops. I don't know, what do you think about that?
Look, they openly talk about this. They openly promote this sort of thing, like the World Economic Forum and these other big globalist organizations. They put out public relations videos, like, you know, hyping and praising and like, you know, oh, we can't wait until we get to a point where everybody has a digital ID tied to your cell phone, tied to your vaccine status, tied to your social media history and whether or not you've been a good little goy, or whether or not, you know, you've been critical of Jews or blacks or some other minority. You know, that's literally like the type of tyranny that these people are pushing for. And they're using COVID, this fake pandemic, as an excuse to get there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a genocidal plan here. But, you know, I do want to – there's a couple of more things that I want to talk about before we – wrap up, and the hour always goes so quickly, John, that it's just takes my breath away, because there's so many things to talk about. But we don't want to leave people with this narrative of no hope, no future. We really don't, because that becomes self-fulfilling. And actually, that is a very much part of the Jewish agenda too, is that they want us to feel that there is no hope, no future. I don't know if I've ever talked to you about this little story about this Canadian award-winning film that was put out a few years ago. I think it was 2018, called The Fireflies Are Gone. But I'll just tell the listeners about it again. It's a film that was an independent Canadian-made film. And I saw it and I thought, gee, that was kind of unremarkable. And it kind of left me down and feeling really, really just down and dejected and like no hope. And that was purposeful. It was about a high school graduating young woman who she really had everything going for her. And yet she didn't really do anything because she herself didn't think there was any hope for the future. And so it left you hanging there. And this film was not even that, you know, it wasn't even that well made. I didn't think, but also it just left you really down. And they gave it awards, like Best Canadian Film of the Year. And I thought about that, and I thought, you know, they do pat themselves on the back for films where they're pushing a certain message, they're pushing a narrative, pushing a thought, a feeling, whatever it is. And that was what they were pushing there, no hope, no future. And I'm very leery of you know, people who are perhaps doing really good work and telling the truth as it is, but that always leave you with no solutions, no hope. Because that does become self-fulfilling. It paralyzes us. If we feel that way, it does end up that way. And that is a Jewish agenda. Look, there is never no hope. We are alive, and until our dying breath, you know, we can be doing things. We can resist. We can, you know, set up our parallel systems. Like if they're shutting us out of their systems, set up our parallel systems that, you know, have healers be the ones we go to if we have questions about our health. Have, you know, food, know your local farmers and grow your own food. And if you can't grow your own food, know your local farmers and have direct connection with people who do grow food. Know who is in your neighborhood that you can trust, who you can count on, that you're going to watch out for each other. That kind of thing is really, really critical and important. And we have to just resist their agenda at every step of the way. If, you know, if at all possible, you just have to say no to what they're doing to us and live life with joy. I mean, they also want us to have no hope of a future because it lowers our vibration. It lowers our resistance to illness and disease, which is dis-ease. Think about the word disease. It's dis-ease. Yeah. So, and Alfred, my brother, who is still in jail, he writes spirited letters. And just recently, actually, I published a story last night on my website, freespeechmonica.com, about a recent experience he had. He's in isolation. He's been in isolation since December 3rd of 2020. So over a year. And I mean, they call it torture after 2 weeks. So just think about that. But he has stayed strong and very spirited. His letters are wonderful. He still maintains his sense of humor in the way he writes. It's just wonderful. It's a real inspiration. Anyway, he was, he's now been put into even an extra special wing, the quarantine wing, because he's not only defiant of the mask, in other words, he insists on breathing air. Now he also refused getting tested even, you know, but he didn't totally refuse. He offered to spit or, you know, into a dish or whatever, but no, they want to poke something in him. So he absolutely refused that. So now he's been put into another wing, and his courtyard hour, like they do get 60 minutes in the courtyard every day, but it's very alone. There's a mesh wire fence that separates half the courtyard off, and he's alone on his side. And there were a few men on the other side the first day that he was in this new wing, and he was able to talk to them. And then he said, well, maybe too well, because the next day he was sent out at 7 in the morning when it was still dark. There was one grumpy old man on the other side, didn't say a word, but okay, that's fine. Then he saw all these crows, and he said there were more crows on the roof and flying around, and the twilight was starting to emerge, and they were blackening the sky. He says he's never seen so many crows in all his life, and they were cawing and cawing, and it almost made him feel like an anxiousness, like from that film The Birds by Alfred Hitchcock, you know, just this anxious feeling was overtaking him. And then from one corner of that courtyard, he could see there was an old chimney there where there were two storks, and there was a big nest on there. And he used to see them from his cell for about a 4-month period. But this is months ago. He hadn't seen them in months because he got moved. He gets moved from time to time in this jail. But for 4 months at that time, these storks were his best friends. Like he could see them right from his cell window. So he was just watching them all the time. And anyway, those storks were sitting up there like sentinels. And gradually these crows, after 30 or 40 minutes of them just darkening the sky and so many and cawing loudly, this eerie, strange episode of that, well, they gradually started to disappear. These crows started to disappear because these sentinels, the storks were there. And then just before the 60 minutes of his courtyard hour were up, there were no more crows, and the storks were the only ones left. They looked down, and one of them did his little rattle. You know how they rattle their beak? Did his little rattle as if in greeting to Alfred, and his heart was just soaring and so happy. And he, you know, he says his heart rattled with joy. And so he just saw such symbolism in this thing that happened. You know, he saw the crows in their masses, their like that, as sort of symbolizing death, and then these storks symbolizing life. I mean, think about the old story of who the stork bringing the baby. I mean, very much just a symbolic meme, you know, but this is what he experienced recently. And John, just before I pass it back to you for a commentary, when think about how it must be if you're locked up in a cell 23 hours out of 24 and have very, very little contact with anybody. And basically you have sensory deprivation going on. And this experience that he had would have been quite remarkable for any of us at the best of times, but think how much intensified it must have been for Alfred in the situation that he's been living. So that's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
no, that's an interesting story. And man, he's such a courageous individual. I mean, to refuse the mask, to refuse the tests after all he's been through, I mean... He really has that fighting spirit, and he definitely has God on his side. And it's such a travesty, everything that's happened to him and continues to happen to him. And the fact that it's almost been a year, it sounds like, that he's been literally in like solitary confinement. That is just such an outrageous situation. Yeah.
Yeah. He's been in jail now since July of 2018, and he's been in solitary confinement since December 3rd. A year, more than a year ago now.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say it has been. Yeah, a year and in what, 6 days or so. Yeah, that's that's incredible. Where is he at now? I mean, does he have a set release date, or where are we at right now with his legal situation?
Yeah, thanks for asking about that. He's supposed to be done his four-year sentence in July of this coming year, 2022. However, there are more charges pending against him, you know, for showing how high his dog Pavlov can jump with a straight arm gesture in the courtyard of the prison, showing a couple of other prisoners, you know. And so really, that's how afraid they are in Germany of these certain symbols and gestures that they criminalize somebody who's locked up. It's not even like he's doing this symbol in the middle of the marketplace in downtown Berlin or something, but even then, what's wrong with just a straight arm open palm gesture? It actually means, you know, in the old Roman salute, it's I come in friendship. You know, this is what it actually symbolizes, because you have your palm open. You're not carrying a weapon in, you know. So really, they are so afraid of that gesture that it's hard to even fathom how powerful that is, because they are, well, their fear of it shows that they just, I don't know what, I'm speechless actually about it. So they're criminalizing him for that, but he was supposed to have some kind of a court date in August, but he wasn't going to wear the mask. And the judge that was supposed to be presiding over that, she had heard that he wasn't going to wear the mask and confirmed that, asked about it. And he said, no, I'm not going to wear a mask. And so she was sort of sickly, I guess, and said, no, I can't be in the same room with him if he's not wearing a mask. So they postponed it indefinitely. I don't know if that's still going to happen. If, you know, maybe a few days before his release, they're going to suddenly bring that up and keep him longer. I really don't know. You know,
well,
so
given their track record, I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, do decide to prosecute him just simply for, you know, raising his arm up in a salute like that. I mean, these people are vindictive. They're hateful. These are monstrous, evil people for putting a man through all of this simply for expressing himself, trying to do what's right, trying to state the truth. You know,
that's how afraid they are of the truth. Exactly that, John. And that is actually, ironically, paradoxically, I should say, what gives me hope is the fact that they are so afraid of the truth, so afraid of symbolism, of something that's wonderful and beautiful. Same thing with the symbolism of the swastika. I mean, it's thousands of years old, that symbol, and it represents good things, you know, light and prosperity and this kind of thing. But why these positive things are so feared, and why the truth is so feared, why information is so feared, why the censorship is so harsh and hard, that they're really afraid. And this actually gives me hope that they don't have it all finished and won. You see, this thing that I said about no hope, no future, that message that they try to give us and impart in us and make us feel and make us internalize that so that it actually becomes true. Well, nothing could be further from the truth, because they prove that with their censorship, with their persecution of people who do tell the truth. That I, in a way, that is that kind of sums it up for me.
Yeah. Well, God bless Alfred. I hope he gets out of there soon, sooner rather than later. He's been through a lot. You've been through a lot, and you know, I tip my hat to both of you guys. I have nothing but respect and admiration for what both of you guys have done. And, you know, God bless Alfred. I wish him the best. Yes. One thing I got to say before we wrap up here is I was looking at, I was trying to find it. I have a quote page on my website, and there's a probably, in my opinion, one of the most important quotes from Mein Kampf. And there's a lot of good quotes in Mein Kampf, but this one always has sort of stuck with me, and it kind of describes perfectly what we were kind of talking about here to conclude the podcast. Hitler writes in Mein Kampf, "He who would live must fight. He who does not wish to fight in this world where permanent struggle is the law of life has not the right to exist." And that's the exact sort of mindset that Alfred has, the exact sort of mindset that you have. We are in a permanent struggle in this existence, and we have to stand up for what's right. And we have God on our side. We have truth on our side. So we have nothing to be ashamed of. And yeah, I mean, that's always been my mindset. And I think that sort of mindset is exactly what you and Alfred both have as well.
John, I think that's an excellent place to wrap it up. That's just so profound, what the quote that you just read from Adolf Hitler. And yeah, this has been really, really great to talk to you again and to reconnect.
Yeah, definitely. We'll have to do it again in the future. Thank you so much for taking the time. And I want to wish you an early Merry Christmas as well.
And to you too. And God bless. And yeah, and just that one, I guess it's shameless self-promotion, but it's not really. I want to get the message out to people. If you want to have more information about Alfred or where to write to, just go to my website. It's called freespeechmonica.com. And Monica is spelled with a K. And there you will find a support Alfred Schaefer page and just, you know, recent articles and such. So
absolutely. Yeah. I will definitely have a link over to your website when I post this program. And
thank
I know
you.
This is a new website because WordPress shut down your previous website.
Correct.
So yeah, I'm glad you're back up and you know, got your website restored. So that's good. I will definitely post a link to this. And Monica, take care. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much, John. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.